Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFM. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Oh, hey!
Oh, hello, how are you?
Hi, Betty. How are you doing?
Betty says hello.
Yeah, Betty the cat. I am fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've had a busy week.
Have you?
Yeah.
Pray tell.
Well, just like work and like life and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, those things.
Are you starting to get a bit like, I'm starting to get a bit stressed about how many plans I've made?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I'm not, because I'm the opposite. I'm anxious that I haven't made any plans.
We've probably made the same number of plans.
I do reckon.
You've probably made more plans than me.
I doubt it.
You went out last night on a weeknight.
I did, yeah.
Like a literal school night.
That was my first time going out for dinner in a long time.
Was it?
Yeah. Long, long time.
There's just a lot in the works, and it's great. Obviously, I'm over the moon to be able to do this stuff now. But at the same time, I feel a little bit like maybe I should have just taken it slowly.
Yeah, I think it's hard, isn't it? Because I don't think we realise the impact that not having done anything for so long has had on us. So I feel like I was saying to my husband that like I felt like I kind of almost was starting to look forward to our evenings on the couch together, same evening that we've had every evening for the last year. Do you know?
Yeah.
I'm so conditioned to it now.
Yeah, so, institutionalised. Yeah,
it's weird to step outside. But I did do that last night and it was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you and I have got a day out on the town planned tomorrow, haven't we?
We sure do.
I'm really excited. Canterbury, watch out. Canterbury. That's all I can say.
Bants and Cants.
Bants and Cants.
Yeah.
We're going to have a great day.
We're going for a nice lunch.
Should we just tell everyone what we're up to? We're literally first step one, shops.
Yep.
Step two, lunch.
Yep.
Step three, probably a bit more shops. Step four, Pub-a-rama.
Pub-a-rama-licious.
Yeah, in England's most historic town.
Yes. It's going to be so nice. I am looking forward to it very much.
Yeah. We should really have been recording these links while we're there, but I think it might have been a bit like lads, lads, lads.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, people don't want to hear that, maybe.
No, they don't.
They do, though, don't they?
Maybe they do. Maybe we'll do a little one. We'll be like, wait.
Okay, guys, let's see what we can do.
Yeah, okay.
I'm really looking forward to it. I've had a bit of a shit week.
Right.
Yeah, I've already posted this on Instagram, so sorry if you've already known about this, but I had a mammogram on Tuesday because I got a fucking lump in my boob again.
Oh, mate, I was scared. I was quite frightened.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the word mammogram and it does seem a bit more serious, like all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah, because last time you had a little lump, you went and they just like prodded it and then they were like, nah, it's fine. Like,
yeah, well, they did an ultrasound.
Right, yes.
And this time they were like, well, do an ultrasound and a mammogram. But they don't tend to do mammograms on younger ladies.
No.
Because of your breast density. I know this now because I read a leaflet.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
But they did one on me, which I find offensive. But
they looked at you and went, those breasts are not very dense at all.
Well, luckily the consultant was like, yes, your breasts were a bit dense for the mammogram. I was like, yeah, fuck you. Fuck you, mammogram. But anyway, sorry, it was a cyst, everyone, just in case you're still wondering.
I'm very relieved.
Yeah, which they aspirated with a large needle. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I was texting you while you were in the waiting room, and then like I knew that obviously you were going in, but you weren't really quiet for quite a long time, and I was like, shit. But it was okay.
Oh, thanks, Emma. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Mate,
it's a bit squeaky bum for everyone for a little bit there.
Yes. But it's all I'm good. Very relieved, and everyone should check their boobs.
Check your boobs, guys. Just do it. Yeah. And a mammogram, it's not that bad. I mean, it's a bit awkward, but I think most of us listening to this have definitely been through worse, so.
Okay, that puts it into perspective for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we talk about the show?
I think we should.
Okay, so we've got, first and foremost, we've got Liz's first role as, first time.
First day at the office.
First day at the office as the BFN Agony Aunt.
Wow.
Wow.
She's got a new briefcase and a pencil
hope
case.
She has too. It's really good. I'm like, I knew she'd be good, but she's really good.
Yeah, she's awesome. And so we won't give anything away about that, right? That's coming up.
Yes.
Then we've got an interview with the one, the only, Ruth Corden.
Ruth Corden, who is, it's really funny because obviously she's like a very funny person, but she's very, like in this interview, was quite kind of, you know, I don't want to say serious, but like, I don't really know another word. She like really poured her heart and soul out.
Yeah, well, she's been through a lot.
She has been through a lot, yeah. I really enjoyed the interview.
Yeah, she's really easy to talk to. She's really lovely. She's got a really nice, infectious giggle. I'm really glad we chatted to her. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved it as well. How to explain Ruth? She is podcast host.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how most people know her. She also happens to be James Corden's sister, which is an irrelevance other than the fact that it like indicates that she's a very funny person.
Yeah, they've got funny bones.
Also, she really knows about, we broached this at the end of the interview, skincare.
I was going to say, listen in if you want some skincare tips to the very end, because we did ask her because she's fucking shit hot on skin.
I took her advice.
Did you?
Yeah, I went and bought vitamin C, but I also bought a retinol, so I've just gone for both. I've just gone the whole hog.
I'm too scared. My skin is so sensitive. I can't go near it with retinol, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I've still got all the problems I had before, but I do think that my skin feels brighter, and I think her vitamin C advice might have been...
Well, there you go. Yeah. Guys, listen in if you too want to take the vitamin C advice.
Yeah.
And then of course, we've got Professor Tim.
Yes, and he's talking thyroids,
mm-hmm.
which is actually a subject that we haven't often, I don't think we've ever discussed it on this podcast.
We have a little bit. I remember I did some thyroid testing myself.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Way back.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it is a very interesting one. I don't think we've not interviewed anyone with this problem, I don't think.
No, we haven't. But it is like, you know, a lot of people talk about it in connection with fertility. So it's definitely one worth listening to.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's kind of it, really, for the show.
That's it, guys.
Yeah. It's quite a solid show, I'd say, today. Classic.
What a package.
Classic BFN.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good times all around.
Yeah.
Quick reminder to, I mean, we have to say this, but if you haven't already pre-ordered our book, you should pre-order our book.
It's such a good book.
Such a great book.
It's the best book I've ever read.
I think it's the best book I've ever written.
And I've read it like 3 or 4 times.
At least. So if you wanted to pre-order it, you can do that on Amazon or Waterstones or bookshop.org, which is where all the independents are, which is where we are.
Yeah, probably. Although, if you buy it from Amazon, then we go up the chart.
Oh yeah,
we were above It Starts With the Egg the other day, which was quite satisfying.
Yeah, it's back up again.
Yeah, I mean, good old Rebecca Fett. She never gets old.
The Fettster, Fettmeister.
We need to get her on the podcast, actually. Yes. So, yes, please read our book. I mean, obviously, eventually read our book, but for now, just pre-order our book.
That would be great.
And then if not, you can follow us on Instagram
at Big Fat Negative,
or Facebook
Big Fat Negative,
or Twitter
at Big Fat Negative,
or you can email us
bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
Take it away, Liz.
Oh, hi friends, how are we doing? doing this agony aunt thing these days. I mean, I say these days, this is like the first one. So I'm excited. I hope you're excited. We've had a question, which I wasn't expecting, to be honest. I don't know why I wasn't expecting a question, but it turns out people want to ask me stuff, which is amazing because I definitely thought I was going to be here answering just my own questions that I made up. But that is not the case. In fact, secondary infertility is a thing too, has written in and is asking about trying for a baby after having had success with IVF. So they were fortunate enough to have success in 2019, having had some IVF with three good PGT tested embryos. So one of those embryos is now their daughter, which is amazing. Many congratulations to you guys. And they're now ready to, or thinking about trying for another baby. So they ask, should we try and implant one or both of the existing embryos, since they already exist, or should we try and do it the old-fashioned way, since that is infinitely cheaper than going for more IVF? And obviously, it would feel absolutely amazing to get pregnant that way. So, yeah, I mean, what a question. What a question. And I think it's going to be, you know, the age-old kind of answer of, you've just got to talk it out. You've got to talk it out, because I think anything to do with TTC, whether or not you're going to go do it, you know, you're trying to do it naturally, or you're going to go for more IVF, you're stepping back into that emotional arena, aren't you? You're putting yourself into a really kind of emotional place, and you have to be strong for that. So, you know, you have to feel like you have to be ready, I think. That's the first thing. That's the first thing that popped into my head. And especially obviously mentioning cost and things, because yeah, absolutely, IVF is really expensive, and I guess it's slightly cheaper because you've got these two embryos in the freezer, and you've had all this PGD testing, which is amazing, but you still have to kind of shell out for everything that goes along with frozen rounds, and you know, again, the emotional turmoil of going through it all again is significant. And I don't think, like, obviously we hadn't had IVF for a couple of years before we did our most recent donor round, and I absolutely had rose-tinted glasses. I absolutely had rose-tinted glasses about how I hadn't appreciated or remembered, I guess, how kind of just emotionally draining everything about it was. And I guess to a degree, I probably feel a little bit that way about trying naturally, because, you know, you just totally forget how soul destroying it is to see that negative pregnancy test at the end of a month, or when your period comes, or when it's late, or whatever it is. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that by any stretch of the imagination that that will happen to you, but I think you do have to prepare for that just emotional turmoil and that emotional kind of journey that you're kind of setting yourself back into. So while the financial cost, as I said, is definitely a consideration to make, I think you also have to just be aware or be mindful of that kind of emotional investment that you're about to make in potentially kind of growing your family. So that's the sort of first thing that kind of popped into my head when I was reading your message. And then obviously, you know, mentioning the sort of either or scenario. And I don't know whether or not you've considered the possibility of maybe doing both. I don't know how feasible that is as an option for you, both from a sort of financial perspective and also from a kind of, an ageing perspective. You know, is it an option for you to try naturally for, say, 6 months, 8 months? And then once you get to the end of that, make a decision about whether or not you want to progress with IVF. Or is it something that you feel as though it's no, absolutely, it's going to be kind of one or the other. We're either not going to kind of try naturally at all. And I have to say, I do see the kind of pull of that, to be honest with you. I do see the kind of attraction of that, because I definitely felt like once we'd been referred for IVF, I definitely felt like the pressure had come off a little bit. Because it was like, oh, well, it's fine. Like, we don't have to kind of keep trying naturally. it's going to happen for us in this way, this way made possible by science. And obviously, you know, naivety, we didn't know any of what we've been through, but it does absolutely take the pressure off. So I can totally understand the kind of lure of one or the other. And, you know, equally, you've got your PGT tested embryos, which, you know, like, that's great. That's kind of indicating that they're really good quality in terms of like genetic testing and all that sort of stuff as well. So you almost feel a bit, or I mean, I say you know, obviously not to put words into your mouth or anything like that, but I would almost feel like, well, it's pretty much guaranteed, surely, because we've had success initially and now we've got these PGT tested embryos and that's amazing. So surely nothing can go wrong. Now, I am now forever an IVF pessimist. So I would, you know, sort of say, well, go into this with your eyes open. But I think, you know, go into any kind of TTC with your eyes open, because it's going to be potentially difficult either way. And also, you obviously mentioned, you know, the kind of amazing feeling of being able to do it naturally. And I, you know, I cannot even imagine how absolutely wonderful that would feel. But again, the kind of pessimist in me comes out a little bit and says, but how will you feel if it doesn't go right? How will you feel if it doesn't go right? And how will that impact emotionally on both of your, on your mental health and on, obviously, on your husband's mental health as well? So as much as I'm all about, you know, going in there with a positive mental attitude, and I think that is great, I also think that you have to kind of just, you know, give that maybe a 5-minute consideration. And I suppose the unpopular opinion in some ways would be, if you don't feel strong enough to do either of those things, you can walk away. You don't have to go through it again. Now, from the sounds of things, it's not necessarily something that you're considering or even an option for you both, because you are fortunate and you do have these options in front of you. But sometimes you feel as though, just because you've got embryos in the freezer, that you have to keep going, and that's not necessarily the case. So it's also worth just considering, is this actually what we want to do, and do we just actually want to walk away from it? Obviously, that's not an answer I can give, but it's just sort of food for thought, I guess. So the other part of your question was around, you know, options if you are fortunate enough to have a successful natural pregnancy or conceive naturally. What do you then do with your existing embryos? And that, again, sounds to me as though you are definitely leaning more towards the sort of natural TTC route, which suggests that maybe you really are not hugely kind of confident or wanting to go through IVF again, which I absolutely completely understand, because it's hugely kind of draining. And obviously, you know, I've never been in this situation, but I did have a little bit of a look online just to see what the options were. And the HFEA website do have a really amazing page talking about embryo donation. So that to me indicates that it is an option in the UK. But it does seem, just from my really quick skimming, that the any kind of donors, embryo donors, egg donor, sperm donor, are obviously rigorously tested. So in order to donate your embryos to another couple, you would need to fit all of that criteria. So it's worth just having a look to see whether or not that is something that you know, that would kind of, you would both fit into, if that is something that you want to do. Obviously, there is an alternative option, which is to donate them to Science. If you don't fit the criteria that is set by the HFEA for embryo donation to another couple, you could look to donate them to Science if you wanted to. I know that Natalie from the Fertility Podcast, I don't know how what the etiquette is actually on referencing another podcast on a podcast, but anyway, I know that Natalie, they decided to sort of step away from IVF and to donate their embryos to Science. And I'm pretty certain that she has done a podcast episode about it. So I shall see if Emma and Gabby can link that below. But I think it's always really helpful to listen to somebody else talk about kind of experiences or something that you are considering, and just to hear their thought process, really. Because, you know, whatever you decide, like, none of these are easy paths to follow. You know, if you elect to step away from IVF completely and try naturally, then, you know, you obviously making decisions around your embryos. Or if you decide to go through IVF again, then equally you're putting yourself, as I said, in that kind of emotional arena. So whatever happens, you have to just, both of you keep talking. Both of you keep kind of communicating with each other. And I would definitely suggest seeking, if you don't already have some sort of talking therapy, then I would definitely advocate going to speak with someone about it. Because hearing from a third party, obviously, not that I'm emotionally attached or involved in any way, but I do have experiences of IVF. So sometimes hearing from somebody who's completely outside of that fertility kind of field is really, really helpful, because they can give a bit of a, I guess, more of a pragmatic and logical perspective to it all. Anyway, I really hope that was helpful. Absolutely best of luck with whatever you decide. And I really hope that you take great care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ruth, thank you so much for joining us.
Do you know, this is a bit of a fangirl moment for me, straight up serious.
No.
Yeah, somebody told me about your podcast. Gosh, I think it must have been back in 2018 now. And we were at a like fertility like wellness day, and I got chatting to this girl Nicola, and she told me about Big Fat Negative, and wow. I was like, oh my god. And I started listening, and when you invited me to be on, I was like, yeah, this is a bit of a surreal moment for me. No, honestly, straight up, I'm not even lying. I feel a bit like, God, this is like a mile. And I remember listening to a couple of episodes in and thinking, I really want to go on that podcast one day.
Oh my God, here I am.
Here I am.
Here you are.
Well, in that case, Ruth, you probably know what's coming.
Yes.
Tell us about your journey.
Oh God, I love this. So gosh, it's a big one. It's a twist and turns one. So
we like those ones best.
I've always had like problematic periods ever since I can remember, really. Like even as a teenager, I was sort of like on and off the pill, and I'm a overweight woman, I'm a fat woman, whatever word you want to use, whatever word people feel most comfortable with. And whenever you go to any health professional, that is the thing that is pinpointed as the problem. So all throughout my teens, I kind of struggled to get to the bottom of what was wrong with my periods. But I suppose, like most women, I spent my 20s trying not to get pregnant, and then my 30s obviously trying to get pregnant. So I think when you're not really tracking your periods, you don't pay a lot of attention to it. When babies aren't really on your radar, you're just like, oh, I wonder how many days my cycle was then. Was it 30? Was it 50? Was it 70? You know. So I then met Matthew when I was sort of in my later 20s, and we got married in 2012. And pretty much decided we wanted to try and grow our family from the word go, really. And it was sort of the beginning of 2013. We got married right at the end of 2012. And it was the beginning of 2013 that I really started to think, God, something isn't right here. Like, I'm having cycles that are maybe like 90 odd days. So I kind of 6 months in, bit the bullet, went to my GP, got the same old lecture. It's because you're fat. It's because you're overweight. Go and lose weight and this will stop. Tried for about 5 years to get to the bottom of my periods. And in that time, I did lose about 6 stone. Nothing changed. Probably did my body more damage by doing that. And then I just stumbled across a GP, really, about 5 years in, who said, yeah, something really isn't right here, and I want to send you for some more tests. Fast forward, I got diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is still now targeted around my weight. I still get the same old shit when I go to the doctor. She said, look, you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome. There's not really anything we can do, but did send us to a fertility appointment at the beginning of 2018. So I pinned all of my hopes on this NHS fertility appointment. And
so by this point, you'd already been trying for 5 years.
Yes. Yeah. Were you nothing.
Furious that it took 5 years for someone to work out what was wrong.
Totally devastated. And I remember when I came out of my consultation and I got diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, I felt such a relief. I don't really know what I thought would happen next, but I just felt like, oh God, at last I wasn't going insane. Like there is a medical diagnosis, there is something wrong. So I went to this fertility appointment, and the consultant was, oh God, I mean, he was an arsehole, really. And by the end of the appointment, he was telling me that I should go away and get a gastric band.
Oh, what a peach.
Yeah, and I remember sort of crying. The nurse, he wanted to weigh me, and he'd already told me that I was too old and too fat to have IVF on the NHS.
Jesus Christ.
He hardly spoke to Matthew in the consultation. The only thing he said to Matthew, who's my husband, is, well, we know you're not the problem because you've got fantastic sperm. And I just remember sitting there thinking, oh my God, like, is this what I've been like longing for? Is this the moment that I've thought, God, is this my turn? Anyway, him and I had a little bit of I was crying hysterically, and he wanted to weigh me. The nurse actually refused to weigh me based on my emotional presentation. And I just remember saying to him, I don't know why you're going to make me stand on the scales. You've already told me I'm too fat. Like, what the hell is this going to do?
He sounds like a...
Oh, God. Like,
who is this guy? Don't say who it is, but like...
Yeah, it was awful. And I left, and the shame, I mean, I cried all the way home. And what followed was just like 18 months of real hell. And I just felt such shame around my story and around my body, and that it was my fault that we couldn't grow our family. And I remember I searched everywhere to find my story. I looked everywhere and I just couldn't find it. So I decided I wanted to try and tell it, really. From that, like January 2018 through to the summer, the summer of sort of 2019 was awful. Like, my mental health completely dipped. I was a shell of my former self. I couldn't look at somebody who was pregnant. I couldn't talk about babies. I just lost who I was, completely and utterly lost who I was. I lost the joy of life. And then we were fortunate enough to be able to buy our own house. And that is a really significant part of my story, because I felt like I was that out of all of the adult clubs, like I couldn't talk about a mortgage, which sounds like a really shitty thing to say, but.
Oh, I've just bought my first house. So I was totally in the same.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know.
I've been there as well. And you can't have a baby. All your friends are like buying houses and having babies. And you're like, I can't do any of it.
And you can't make the mortgage jokes and you can't sort of think, oh, this is like a noose round. You know, like I just felt like we were renting and, you know, I felt like I wasn't adulting, whatever the hell that means. Anyway, we were fortunate enough in 2019 to buy our own house and we moved in and I kind of had this, like, this is going to be it. This is going to be the house. We're going to bring a baby home in. And that was in the summer. And then it got to the autumn of 2019 and I was done. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Mm. And Matthew and I had times where we'd sort of stopped trying, in inverted commas, but we hadn't really. And every time we had sex, I was still telling myself I was pregnant and I was still like Googling symptoms and thinking, this is it, this is it. So we did I don't know whether it's unheard of, but I've not really heard other people talk about this, but we got to the end of 2019 and I said, enough. Like, we have got to put a stake in the ground. The old has got to go. And for me, a big part of that was stopping trying completely. And by that, I mean using contraception, because I just needed to say, I can't do this anymore. I can't stay on this hamster wheel. I can't run this like rat race. Mm. I don't know how I'm going to feel during this process, but I basically was like, I remember lying on my bed with Matthew, just bawling my eyes out. And I just said to him, I'm losing myself. I'm completely losing who I am. This is affecting us. It's affecting my wider relationships. It was affecting my relationship probably with people that I hadn't even realized. Both my siblings have got children. My relationship with my mum has always been amazing, but I was starting to feel like that. I just felt so guilty that I couldn't kind of extend her grandchildren. It was so painful. And I just said, I've got to stop this. I've got to just stop. So we sort of had 12 months where we just lived our life. Now, obviously, what followed was, you know, a pandemic.
Fucking COVID. This was our time to shine.
I was like, fuck you. But actually, I just feel like I've lived a bit more. Like I've been intentional about finding joy. I've realized that the grass often looks greener over the fence, and sometimes you get there and it is just grass. You know, I've realized that comparison is the thief of joy, and that is so true. Like, if I'm comparing myself to what other people have, I'm missing what I've got in front of me. And I just was like, I need to just breathe again. And actually, the 12 months that followed for me were life-giving, were tough, really hard, really tough, but also a new space for me to step into. I started a podcast with my sister.
Yes. We'll be plugging that later.
Thank you, which I love doing. It feels like a new kind of lease of life. We got signed by a production company. We've just signed with a kind of well-known platform. Like, you know, I kind of think, God, all the times I beat myself up about what I thought was my fault, I could have missed so much stuff. And that doesn't mean to say that there aren't days that aren't horrendously painful. That doesn't mean to say that I wrote a post about this a few days ago on Instagram. You know, sometimes my childlessness feels like my label inside my clothing that's digging in a bit deeper. And some days I can put the cardigan on and I don't feel that label and it doesn't exist. And then other days it's scratchy and it hurts and I'm constantly fiddling with the jumper to make it sit right. And I'm trying to carry it. And it's like, God, that label's really digging in at the moment.
It's a really nice analogy.
Thank you. But what I've learned is that that's seasons, I think. And I think parenting has seasons and, you know, marriage has seasons and friendships have seasons and life is one big up and down season, really. Mm. And people often say to me, like, how did you get to the stage of living with this? And I suppose I sort of ask myself what hurts, what helps, what heals, really. And that is really what I try to do. I try to nurture myself. I try to parent myself. I take note of what's really hurting me and what's helping me and what I find healing in. And I just sort of try and live with it and, you know, carry it as best I can. But that doesn't mean to say that it's easy or it's a walk that, you know, isn't painful, because there are points where it really is.
I mean, a lot of the things that you just said, that you've kind of found ways to live with it and things like that, are impossibly difficult. Mm. How do you get through life? How do you get through those seasons when the label is digging in a bit much? Because that, I mean, you just kind of said that you do it. That is so hard.
I've been in a lot of therapy and I think...
Lovely.
I think one of the biggest things I think we need in any of this walk of childlessness, infertility, IVF treatment, adoption, fostering, whatever it is we choose to grow our families and to get children in our lives. And for lots of people who've never walked that, they don't get it. But for us mm-hmm. that have, I think it's the self-insight and the exploration that we have to do is far deeper than most other human beings.
Gotcha.
And I think for me, what I've learned to do is that those days that are really, really, really painful, is I do ask myself those questions. Okay, what's hurting? What is this? What is it about this that's hurting? Is it that, you know, I don't know who's going to look after me when I'm old, which is a really big fear for those of us that are childless. Mm-hmm. You know, is it hurting that we're getting together as a whole family in a couple of weeks and I'm going to watch my nieces and nephews with their cousins and that's going to really hurt? Mm-hmm. And then that question of what helps. Okay, so what can I do to help me in that? Do I need to journal a bit more? Do I need to reach out to a friend? Do I need to tap into some of this community that understands what this is like? Do I need to put away my phone? Do I need to talk to Matthew? Do I need to phone my therapist and say, hey, look, I know we haven't touch base for a bit, but can I book a session in? Like this is digging in a bit deeper. This is, and then I suppose what heals is, you know, finding those rhythms of life that help me to nurture myself. And I think we don't parent ourselves, you know. Mm. Small Ruth still exists. She's in there somewhere. And she needs to be parented and nurtured. And often we learn that when we become parents. And so when you don't become a parent, you don't often learn what that is to look after and nurture yourself. Mm-hmm. So I've spent a lot of time in this last year thinking, how do I nurture myself? How do I make sure that Ruth has a voice? And I suppose one of the things I do is I'm a bit of a worrier. I'm an overthinker. And I've really started to, and one of the biggest worries for me is, God, when I'm 70, who's going to look after me? And I'm constantly saying to my nieces and nephews, you better come after me.
Remember who your favourite auntie is.
Exactly that. But I think there is that fear of like, God, who's going to look after me?
There an element of kind of making childlessness okay in your head, even if it's not what happens in the end, but kind of just if you make that feel okay and you sort out that this sort kind of the problems that you see, like not having no one to look after you, does that make it better?
Yeah, and I think for me, I that those anxieties and those worries are valid, but I don't give them all the space in my head at any time. So I do often, this sounds like a really bizarre thing to say, but I do often schedule my worries. So if a thought comes into my head, especially around my childlessness, I'm like, I don't deal with that now. I deal with that in the shower. Or, God, that's an interesting thought. I haven't got time to think about that now. Because I think worry and catastrophizing is the inability to live in the moment. And it's the inability to think about what we've got in the here and now. And if I say to myself, actually, that's a legitimate thought and it's a legitimate worry, I do need to give that some time and some space, but I'm not going to do it now where it's going to spill out of my head and it's going to become out of control. And I think going back to it and thinking, gosh, okay, what am I worried about? If our life remains childless forever, well, I'm worried that I'll be the person in the old people's home with nobody to visit them. But then I think I've got two brilliant siblings. And actually, you know, I could have children and that could be the reality as well. You know, there's lots of people who end up estranged from their children or are the people in the old people's home that don't have visitors. So I suppose I become logical and I think, well, actually, that could have been me. There's no point worrying about it.
That's a really good point.
Like, when I get there, it will happen or it won't happen. So I think that those three things, what hurts, what helps, what heals, has been really, really, like, yeah, for me, I think there's a real rhythm of, gosh, this is really hurting today, and what is it that's hurting me? And sometimes I think we don't step into that hurt enough. And sometimes, yeah, I think we tell ourselves, God, we shouldn't sit there for too long. Mm. But actually, that is sometimes where we do the biggest kind of thinking and working through why we're feeling the way we're feeling.
I do like the way that you comfort yourself by saying, well, I could die alone anyway.
Yeah.
Either and way.
I think that's true, isn't it? Like, loads of people end up estranged from their parents.
Happens so many times. Yeah. It must, like, and obviously it's terribly sad, but you're right. I mean, it could happen to any of us. So, like, it's not on your chart if you don't have children. No. It's on anyone's,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And you can fall out with siblings and you can, yeah, you know, I've got lots of friends. I tell myself, okay, I might not have a child visiting me, but I'll have nieces and nephews visiting me and I'll have friends visiting me. And, you know, I very much doubt I will be that person, but God, I could have four birth kids and might not have anyone visiting me. You know, yeah. I think it's so easy to think children fix so much of that stuff. Mm. And they don't always, that, you know, they don't always kind of fix that stuff. It can sometimes make things harder, I think.
Absolutely.
What's
your kind of and you may not be in a place where you've thought about this, but like, what are your options now? Like, what does the future look like for you guys in terms of growing that family? Or are you kind of still parked it?
Yeah, I think I know that the kind of term childless not by choice is sort of used for people who have come to the end of their kind of, are we going to grow our family question, and have made a decision quite strongly that they're not going to.
Yeah.
I would say in the season that we're in, we are living childless, not by choice, although we haven't probably made the final decision. I toy a lot with treatment. I'm 38 in May. I'm 39 in May. God, I've just knocked a year off my life. That's depressing. I'm 39 in May.
We all have, Ruth. We all have.
God, you know, one of the things, this is going to sound like a really bizarre thing to say, but one of the things that, there's a few things that terrify me about treatment. What if it doesn't work? I know that IVF is a cruel lottery, and I know I'm talking to two people who, you know that. And I feel like the roll of the dice for me and it not working, God, I honestly don't know how people get through that. Genuinely, I have so much respect for people who do that.
It's not easy.
No, it's not. And I just don't know that I've got it in me. But do you know, this is going to sound like such a bizarre thing to say, but one of the things that terrifies me the most about treatment, if it were to be successful, is secondary infertility. And I think that is so complex and so misunderstood and so like, God, well, you should just be happy because you've got a baby.
And yeah,
don't maybe understand the kind of layers of it. My siblings are so important to me and are such a massive part of my life. We have such a close bond.
Yeah.
I think the tying up of, God, I love this baby and I'm so thankful for it, alongside, oh my God, I'd give anything to give you a sibling. I think it's such a complex journey to manage.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I'm pretty much an only child.
Right.
And so I've always been of the opinion of like, oh my God, if we can just have one, like, yeah, I'm happy with that. That is fine with me. But that's because my experience has been... I've got half brothers and sisters, but they're so much younger than me. I pretty much am an only child.
Yeah, of course.
I think it's your experience. Obviously, if you have that relationship with your siblings, then of course you'd kind of crave that.
If somebody could say to me, you can do IVF and you'll have twins, I'd be like, God, where do I sign up? How much?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Stick it in me.
Yeah, let's do it. So, I mean, I toy with treatment. Matthew and I talk about treatment a lot. We talk about it, you know, most weeks, if not, you know, most days we have that, like, should we? I'm terrified of it, really, in all honesty. I'm in a real space of like, you know, once you roll that dice, when do you stop? if it doesn't work. You know, this grief of childlessness, I've sort of learned how to manage and walk with. Mm. I honestly don't know what I would do if it ended in loss, or it was, you know, if it didn't work. So there's, I mean, fostering and adoption has always, I think, been on our radar, definitely fostering. Even if we'd have had birth children, I think that's something that we would have looked to do. And I think fostering is something that I very much lean towards, probably fostering over adoption. And it's something that I still feel very passionately about.
Why fostering over adoption?
Oh God, that's a really good question. I don't necessarily, I think lots of people who want to adopt want babies, and I do understand that. Obviously, I totally get when you're, you know, having walked the path that I've walked. I'm not necessarily hooked on having a baby or a young child. I think, you know, we earn our stripes as parents. That, you know, that's what parenting is about. It's about nurture and love at whatever age. And you know, if you take a 5 or 6 year old, they're still very little, they still need you, they, you know, they still need and I think reparative parenting is such a big part of fostering, which is probably the thing that I'm most passionate about. So I think for me, you know, it kind of, obviously if Matthew and I could have a birth baby, of course, but if that isn't going to be our story, I would happily look to foster an older child with the view to maybe adopting them long term if that was right for them. But I think everybody wants babies and younger children. Obviously, I totally understand why, and that isn't a dig at anybody who, you know, is looking for that. But for me personally, I'd be happy to take an older child or a sibling group or perhaps a more complex child. That's why I sort of lean towards fostering a bit more.
And I guess you need to kind of think, you've got to be at the end of your journey before you start even considering that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And I want to have fully grieved, you know, not having birth children. I want to, if we invite a child into our home that has already experienced trauma and loss, I want to make sure that I'm in the best place I possibly can be to nurture and love and, you know, parent that child properly. But fostering is something that I think I would have done anyway, regardless of, you know, how my life would have turned out. So probably in the next few years, fostering is something that we will look into. But we're still not fully laid down. You know, we haven't fully had the conversation that says we're really not going to pursue treatment, are we? So,
Well, just to change the subject completely, you mentioned your siblings there, and obviously you've got a very funny sister and a very funny brother, and you're very funny because we listened to your podcast. Do you think kind of humour has helped you get through this a bit?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. I did a interview, well, a kind of article with Grazia magazine a few months ago, back end of last year.
Yeah.
And the things that we talked, that me and the person that wrote it talked about, we like, humour in our family is such a big part of who we are. And laughing, my God, like, I think we underestimate how cathartic and comforting laughter can be. You know, really laughing with somebody is such a bonding experience, and it brings people so much closer together. And that's not to say that I don't grieve what we haven't got or what we've been unable to do with our family, but I definitely know that being intentional as well about humour and joy, you know, like, there are so many things that I can do at the drop of a hat. And that doesn't mean to say that it's not painful, but Matthew and I are intentional about finding the joy in life in terms of saying to each other, if we're in a situation, my goodness, we wouldn't be doing this if we had children. And I think there does have to be an intentionality when you are living life and you feel a bit left behind by society and you feel like you don't really fit because your family doesn't look like people think it should at a certain stage. I think you have to be intentional about laughter, about joy, about fun. And that, you know, me and Andrea and James love humour and we find it wherever the hell we can, whether that's mimicking somebody that we've just observed or watching a comedy together or just on the phone, FaceTime, being stupid, making each other laugh. You know, that is a big part of our lives and our relationship for sure.
How about you and Matthew? How has that impacted you guys?
Oh my God. I mean, how we stay like in long-term committed relationships or married when you go through this shit, it's like a miracle, right? Yeah. You know? Like, I feel like we all deserve a fucking pat on the back. it's been really, really, really in the middle of our kind of infertility stuff, right in the heart of it. It came out that Matthew was a secret drug addict.
Wow.
Like a really interesting like turn of events.
That's
in our story.
Not nothing you'd see coming.
No, and I found out because I opened a bill that I thought was addressed to me, and it was addressed to him, and that we were in huge amounts of debt, and he'd been secretly taking cannabis and cocaine, and God, yeah,
oh,
it was
God.
A whole. And so there was a point in our kind of, he's nearly 4 years clean, but there was a point in our, you know, journey and our experience where it had to be about getting him better, mm-hmm. and everything else had to sort of go out the window and take a back seat, really. I told a story on my podcast with my sister this week where I'll never forget. Matthew and I, it was like in the days of, it's 2 minutes past 12, I think I've just ovulated, we've got to have sex, come on. Like, and he was like, I'm not really in the mood. I was like, I was like an army marshal. I was like, I don't care. Like, I definitely think I've ovulated. I don't give a shit whether you're in the mood or not. Anyway, we were halfway through doing the deed and he was like, Ruth, look, I'm really not in the mood. And I was like, I don't know where this came from, but I basically said, oh, for God's sake, Matthew, come on. All you've got to do is blow your beans up me. What's your problem? And that was it. Like, mood killer. Oh, my God. Like, completely out the window. I think I spent the next 5 minutes crying because I was like, I've blown it and I think I'm ovulating. And I actually think, you know, people don't understand the impact this stuff has on everything. Like, your life just becomes a military operation. You know, if I had a quid for every fucking stick I'd peed on, loaded. We wouldn't have a mortgage. We'd have a house in the Bahamas. Like,
yeah.
And there's this, like, the impact, I think, on our mental health when we experience the trauma that is infertility. And God, it is a trauma. Like, I think all of us who have experienced this are like, well, you know, we've just managed it, but it's so traumatic. Mm. You can't walk through a house fire and not have scars or burn. You know, you can't. And so I think for us, we have learnt more about each other in the last, probably we've been married for 8 years. I think we've experienced a deep, deep depth of love and attachment alongside a deep depth of, God, how are we going to make it through this the other side? Like, is our relationship going to come out just frazzled and a kind of shadow of what it was? But I think for us, it's just been about, you know, we both have to be on the same page. So if I said I really want to pursue treatment and Matthew didn't want to, we've always very, very clearly said we've got to be both in with both feet, and we won't convince the other one. You know, it's got to be a decision we both make. I think I've had to learn a lot about the way Matthew grieves. I'll never forget I did a pregnancy test, one of the kind of many that I've done, and I was absolutely convinced I was about, I don't know, I must have been about 15 or 16 days in inverted comma late, what I thought was late from the period.
Those
bastards. And I was convinced it was going to be positive, and I woke up desperately early one morning and I went into the bathroom and it was negative, and I remember like lying on the bathroom floor, bawling my eyes out, and I went and got back into bed and I just said to Matthew, it's negative, and he burst into tears as well. And that day, I didn't go to work, he didn't go to work, and I was desperately, frantically searching for, like, stories and people's grief and something that resembled what we were experiencing. And I found this kind of blog page, and I was reading it and reading it to Matthew, and he lost it with me, and he was like, I don't want to hear about other people's shit, I want to deal with our own. And I think there was a real understanding for me that was like, oh God, I can't force you to grieve this the way I do.
Yeah,
I can't have an expectation that, you know, we fall into very stereotypical men and women. I'm an external processor, he's an internal processor. Yeah. Like, I want to sit with my girlfriends and share everything, he wants to run and hide. And yeah, I think
we're very like that in my relationship as well.
Yeah, I'm an extrovert, he's an introvert. I mean, like, you know, we are like very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had this belief that the way I grieved things was the right way. And I had this belief that I had to make this square peg fit into this round hole and for Matthew to join me in the way I grieved things. But actually, I think there needed to be an understanding from me that the way that he worked through stuff was okay. And
yeah.
I had to give him space and time. And even now, sometimes I'll say to him, what do you think about this? And he actually says, I don't know, and I need some time to think about it. And I get a bit pissed off, but I just have to realise that he has to go away and think through that stuff.
It's funny, isn't it? I was talking to my husband about it the other day, and he was saying that kind of the flip reverse of that was that to try and support me, he could often see that he'd be trying to talk to me, and he would know from my face that I was thinking about infertility or treatment or wombs or injections or something. And he said he used to have to say to himself all the time, okay, I'm just going to have to let her talk about this for a while. And then that'll be good for her. And then we can hopefully move on, kind of thing. Yeah, to kind of, because otherwise you just get really pissed off with me all the time because I'm constantly thinking about something else.
A really good person on this is Julia Bueno, who we interviewed a few years ago now about miscarriage. She talks about the different kinds of grief and how different people grieve, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know, I thought I was, you know, I was there thinking, oh, I'm really emotionally together and you're not, and because you don't want to talk about it, you know, you've got this wrong, you know, the way that I do this is the right way. And actually, it's not a pissing contest, is it? Like, it's you know, we can't get into you do it right, I do it wrong, I do it right, you do it wrong. It has to be a sense of, okay, I've chosen this, I've chosen to be in this with you. I still choose to be here. I still choose to love you. And love is a choice. It is a daily choice. And I'm going to choose to stand in this, even if you're dealing with stuff perhaps the way I wouldn't. I'm going to say, cool, that's the way you deal with it. So, but he is my best friend. I mean, God, we have been through some things that people don't go through in 30 years of marriage, in less than 10 years of marriage. And we have seen each other at our best and our worst. We have walked really, really, really dark times with each other. But I wouldn't choose to do this with anybody else. And he undoubtedly is, you know, my hero. Like, getting clean from drugs for us, and he did it for us, is like, you know, what a guy. a guy. So,
absolutely.
And I feel so, Matthew could have died through his drug addiction if we hadn't have, you know, got to the bottom of it when we did. So I feel every day so lucky that he's still here and I still get to do life with him. Like, you know, he could have ended up dead or in prison probably. So
I'm gonna completely change the tone now,
okay,
because I want to talk to you about skincare.
Oh yes. I love this.
From drug addiction to
skincare
in one
seamless
smooth move. So yeah, Ruth, you've become a bit of a skincare guru.
Oh God, I don't know about that. I just love it. I'm just obsessed with it. I just read it all the time.
Can you just tell us a bit about where this came from?
It's interesting because I didn't really like wear makeup as a teenager. I sort of got into it in my mid-20s. And I think the person that got me into makeup and then subsequently into skincare is a woman called Hannah Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how I found her. But I found her on YouTube, or I was scrolling Instagram and I found her, and she just made makeup feel so accessible. So she was just like, the first video I watched was like, I'm going to do my face in 10 minutes. And she used her hands and she didn't have loads of brushes. And she used a bronzer that was like, you know, she was like, oh God, this bronzer's like half finished. I should have picked a different bronzer. And she is a makeup artist. Like she is, she's done like royal weddings and she is a world renowned makeup artist. And I remember thinking, crikey, you've made this feel accessible for me. Like I can sit in my room and, you know, try and put concealer on with my fingers rather than a flashy brush. And you don't do contouring. And, you know, that suits me. And then from then on, I was just like, oh my God, I love this stuff. I love the creativity that makeup brings. I started to dabble into skincare and I started to see a bit of a difference in my skin and kind of how it reacted and responded. And then it just became this out and out, like, oh my God, I love this stuff. And I'm going to devour it and read about it and follow loads of kind of, you know, Caroline Hirons being the absolute queen and guru. And I just started to really like just, you know, really get into this stuff and try different things. And then I started to follow people that had different skin types to me. And I started to think about, oh God, so this person's got very, very oily skin and what do they do? And I just became really interested in some of the science behind it and the products that worked and didn't work. And yeah, I just absolutely love it now. And I just like read blogs and books and
I feel like I'm a bit annoyed that we're not doing a Zoom because I could really do with a consultation.
That's fine. We can have a consultation at another time. That's
I've got some inflamed bits that I'm not happy with right now.
My wrinkles are off the charts. So can you give us your best tip?
So I would say so retinol, which is derived from vitamin A, is has become a big kind of sort of hallmark for wrinkles.
Yeah, I'm a bit scared of retinol, hence.
Yeah, so I don't feel like you need a retinol. For me, I think the best place to start is a really good vitamin C, so something that's brightening. So vitamin C is really good at plumping and brightening the skin. And often as we age, our skin can become duller. And that's one of the things that, and then wrinkles become more apparent because it's like, oh my God, my skin looks dull. Okay. So vitamin C, hyaluronic acid is the best plumping, moisture keeping thing that we can have, and a good moisturizer. So you want to cleanse. If you don't wear makeup, a single cleanse is fine, but try, you know, be washing your face at nighttime. If you've got more oily to combination skin, you want a kind of gel. If you've got drier skin, you want something that's kind of creamy and maybe rose kind of like sort of a high rose concentrate. That's really good for like drying delicate skin. A good vitamin C, a good hyaluronic acid, and a good moisturizer.
Awesome. I do believe that retinol is not so good if you're TTC.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, Caroline Hirons would dispute that massively and would be like, it's absolutely fine, it's safe when you're pregnant and breastfeeding. And
fuck,
she loves debunking myths. You know, people that talk about clean skincare, I'm like people message me and they're like, can you tell me some clean skincare? I don't know what people mean when they say that. Like, I don't know what this, like, do you mean vegan? Do you mean cruelty free? Like, and so what is clean skincare? What is it? Because, you know, I don't really know where that started or where that's come from. And Caroline's big into being like, people need to fuck off talking about clean skincare. Like, she is like, it doesn't exist. It's bullshit. So I've had a couple of messages saying, you know, I'm trying to conceive. What advice would you give me around skincare? And I'm honestly like, I don't know. I'm not that, you know, it's like the whole, you know, should you just drink pomegranate juice and eat the core of a pineapple if you're trying to have a baby? Like, I don't really sign up to that stuff. So
fair. Absolutely fair.
But obviously, if you're trying to conceive, don't use retinol because I don't want somebody to message you and be like, I was trying to have a baby. So
with the one thing stopping me.
Yeah. If you're pregnant, trying to conceive or breastfeeding, don't use retinol.
Okay, Ruth, this has been awesome. Just before we go, can you just tell us about your podcast and where we can find it?
Yeah, of course. So my sister and I started our podcast, Finding the Funny, almost a year ago. It's been going a year.
Happy birthday.
It'll be a year in June. We can't believe it. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. We sit down every week for about half an hour and we just chat shit. We do the big questions. Ange tells us what's been getting on her shitting tits. We talk about
shitting tits.
We talk about dickish behaviour, which is, you know, things like, you know, people, like one of the best ones we've ever done is Facebook local community groups. You know, there's a helicopter over my house. Does anyone know why? No, I'm not the police.
I love them.
I'm an absolute addict.
And then we finish every episode with a segment called Don't Go There, which is a bit more of a serious segment. And we've looked at everything from my sister's in the early menopause. So we covered that. We've covered infertility. My sister had miscarriages between her son and daughter. This week we had the woman My Frugal Year, who is an Instagrammer, talking about money. So we try and, you know, tackle subjects that people really don't go there with. We've got a guy on in a few weeks called Knackered Knickers from Instagram, Sean, who is he's going to come and talk about male infertility. So we just have a bit of a laugh. We observe the things of life, and it's very stupid. It's not highbrow at all. It's just,
that's what we like.
Two sisters sitting down every week and having a bit of a laugh. So yeah, Finding the Funny, you can find it on all your big podcast platforms.
Awesome. Well, Ruth, thank you so much for coming. It's been an absolute joy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, honestly, thank you.
A highlight for me.
Now it's time for IVF.
What the F? I think our harmonies are getting better.
I mean, I'm dragging you down. You're a really good singer. I am not a good singer. But hey, I look, you know, what I don't have in tuning, I make up for in enthusiasm. I believe personally.
Do you know what I really miss doing is a karaoke night? I love a karaoke night.
Do you know my auntie and uncle own a karaoke bar in Cyprus?
Oh my god. Yeah. Why have we not gone there?
Yeah, I know. Because I don't really like doing karaoke because I can't sing. And every time I go, I feel inadequate because I'm like, tonight I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And I never do.
No offense, but if you're doing karaoke in Cyprus, I don't think you're hanging out with like great singers. I think you're hanging out with a lot of pissed English people.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
I could have got away with something.
You'd probably be a superstar. You'd probably be like English Cyprus's answer to Jennifer Lopez.
The people would love me.
Yeah, they would.
Well, next time. Next time I go over there, if that ever happens again.
Do you want to talk about thyroids?
Probably.
Okay.
So obviously thyroids can impact on fertility. Yeah. And
Okay, so thyroids, I think a better way of saying it is thyroids are often mentioned in connection with fertility.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you speak to a lot of people in the community, they will say to you, get your thyroid tested. Like, please get your thyroid tested. Mm. But then I was looking up the NICE guidelines. Because I think when you, and people can go and listen back, but when you were going through it, you were concerned that your thyroid hadn't been tested, right?
I think so. And I went and bought a Thriver kit to test it myself and turned out it was all fine.
And I had no fucking idea whether mine had been tested or not, but assumed it had. And there's a lot of people that would say, get your thyroid tested. It's really important. However, looking through the NICE guidelines, this leapt out at me. It says it's got a do not do recommendation, which is interesting. And it says women with possible fertility problems are no more likely than the general population to have thyroid disease, and the routine measurement of thyroid function should not be offered in connection with infertility. Estimation of thyroid function should be confined to women with symptoms of thyroid disease. So I just thought that was quite interesting because I had taken it as absolutely gospel that you should always test it.
That's interesting.
I'm fairly certain that we will get emails from people being like, fucking test it. What are you on about?
Yeah. Well, I'm reading something and it says undiagnosed thyroid dysfunction can make it difficult to conceive.
Yeah, well, there you go. So maybe, you know, up to you. Professor Tim has his own views.
Of course he does. He always mentions here.
But I just found it quite interesting that is mentioned. Although, you know, as we know, NICE guidelines can sometimes be a bit hit and miss, can't they?
Yeah. I understand it. If you've got unexplained infertility and you're looking for answers, why not test everything? Yeah. I've ticked that box. You know?
It seems funny because it seems to me like quite an inexpensive test.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you? It's like a blood test. It's not like,
yeah,
you know, but you know, I'm sure they've got their reasons for making that recommendation.
Indeed, I'm sure they do. I guess let's refer to Tim.
Yeah.
Good old Tim. What do you say, sir?
So the thyroid gland is in your neck and it obviously produces thyroid hormone. And the hormone which actually controls the thyroid gland is called thyroid stimulating hormone, or TSH. And it's actually TSH, which is the test that doctors would usually do to see how over or underactive your thyroid is. Now, over the years, there has been some controversy over the extent to which thyroid is affecting fertility and the extent to which an abnormal TSH should be treated or not treated. In general, a normal TSH will be somewhere between around 0.5 up to between 4 and 5, depending on which lab you have your test taken in. If the TSH is very low, so below 0.5, it actually means that your thyroid gland is overactive. So it's putting out too much thyroxine. And that's actually quite unusual. So for a woman who's not taking thyroid hormone, if you have a TSH of less than 0.5, it could mean that you've got various conditions. There's one called Graves' disease and various other conditions that are usually antibody related, and there are antibodies that are pushing the thyroid gland to produce too much thyroxine. So certainly if anyone has a TSH of less than 0.5 and is not taking thyroxine, then absolutely that needs to be investigated further, probably by an endocrinologist. If you are taking thyroxine tablets and your TSH is less than 0.5, it generally means you're taking too much thyroxine, and so your doctor would need to be reducing your dose. However, this is all quite uncommon. The more common side of things is to have a high TSH, so a TSH above 4 or 5. And that means you have an underactive thyroid, which is actually quite a common condition, particularly in women. Now, in terms of what an underactive thyroid does, one of the classic things can be that it can interfere with ovulation. So women with an underactive thyroid may notice that their periods become very heavy and start to space out. They may also notice that they put on weight and find it difficult to lose weight, and perhaps feel the cold more than they used to and more than others. Having said that, what I've just said are actually quite common symptoms, and so many people will think if they have put on weight and are feeling the cold, well, it must be my thyroid, but then when they actually get their TSH checked, they see that it's actually normal. However, if the TSH is high, so above 4 or 5, again depending on your doctor's view, then in general the treatment for that would be to start some thyroxine hormone tablets, which you would take every day, and then have your TSH checked again in around 6 to 8 weeks' time. And then we would hope to see that your TSH has then dropped down into the normal range. Now, the final part of the puzzle is, what about a TSH level that is between 2.5 and, for instance, up to 4 or 5? Now, you'll notice that I said at the beginning that a normal TSH is between 0.5 up to 4 or 5. But historically, many people have thought, well, perhaps there is a problem with women who have, or from a fertility point of view, for women who have a TSH between 2.5 and 4 or 5. And going back about sort of 5 to 10 years or so, there became a bit of a vogue for women who had a TSH in that range to start giving them thyroxine to bring their TSH down to less than 2.5. And the thinking was that, well, perhaps that would help improve fertility. However, there was a very large UK-based study called the Tablet Study, quite appropriately, that came out a couple of years ago, where women with a TSH between 2.5 and 4.0 were actually given either placebo tablets or thyroxine tablets with an aim of getting their TSH down to less than 2.5. And the aim was to look to see, did that affect their fertility? And it made zero difference. So therefore, taking thyroxine tablets, if you have a TSH between 2.5 and 4.0, did not improve fertility over taking placebo. So practice in most clinics changed pretty quickly after that. Also, the study showed that there was no advantage in measuring thyroid antibodies, which was quite commonly done beforehand. So therefore, I would say fairly normal practice now in the UK is, if your TSH is between 0.5 and somewhere between 4 or 5, that is considered to be normal, and most clinics probably would say to you, you don't need to do anything more. If your TSH is above 4 or 5, then usually you'd be commenced on thyroxine tablets with an aim to get it down to less than 2.5. So hope that's been helpful. Certainly thyroid disease, as I mentioned, is very common. Certainly in pregnancy nowadays, then for women who are taking thyroxine tablets, they'll be looking to get it down to less than 2.5 during pregnancy. But it's also a fact that when pregnant, women's TSH levels drop also, which is partly why it can be confusing measuring TSH levels before pregnancy and then extrapolating that to what they should be during pregnancy when pregnancy itself changes things. Hope that's been helpful.
And that's a wrap.
That's it, guys. Over and out this Tuesday. This Tuesday is done for us.
I hope you've enjoyed this classic BFN episode.
Yeah, the classic.
It is quite a classic, isn't it?
What makes you feel like it's classic?
I just feel like it's very solid. Like, we've got a great interviewee. We've got Liz being great. We've got a classic Professor Tim. Mm. Like, it just, it flowed.
Yeah. Pure, you know what I mean? Vibes.
Yeah, pure absolute vibes. BFN vibes.
Oh dear, very good. Yes, well, obviously tune in next week where we'll have another classic BFN for you.
So next week we are talking to Dr. Amina Hersey. She's otherwise known on Instagram as the PCOS doctor.
Oh yeah.
And we're talking about PCOS.
She does what she says on the tin.
She does what she says on the tin. It's really interesting. She's got some really, I mean, we talked about PCOS before, but I think she's got some great great views on it, kind of in the context of being a woman of colour and how that can affect diagnosis and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, I interviewed her for a story I wrote for work the other day. She was really good in that as well.
You?
Yeah.
Could you sneak in there with your extra interviews?
Yeah, I did. I snuck in there.
You can't help yourself, can you?
Yeah, I cross-pollinated jobs and side hustle.
Hey, that is awesome. I like it when the two meet. Yeah. The streams cross.
It's a new thing for me and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of our wiffle waffle.
Yeah, I'm off to make a pizza.
Oh, me too. So weird.
Pizza, not make one.
What kind? What brand?
I think I'm going to go for an Aldi, like spicy.
Ooh, spicy
number.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not like a terrible snob now. Mine's Waitrose.
Oh, God.
Only because Waitrose is the supermarket in Ramsgate. Like, it's the main supermarket that you go to.
Well, over here in Whitstable, which sounds more shishy, but clearly isn't. We're Aldi, Team Aldi, all the way.
Hashtag Aldi.
Yeah.
It is the sensible choice, isn't it? Right, guys, we're off to eat pizza. Love you lots. Have a great week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.